My name's Isabel, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Isabel.
Hi, Isabel.
I've done this work as it's laid out in the big book with the help of God, and my big book step study sponsor made all the amends I can make to this point. And with God's help, I live in 10, 11, and 12, which gives me the best life I could have ever wanted. So glad to see everybody here. You know, whenever I sign up, I always think, oh, it's Mother's Day, and, you know, there'll be like three people here, and, you know. But it never happens that way. There is a solution. You know, we've, at this point in the rotation, this is our fourth reading. Because first we start out with the doctor's opinion. And then we read more about alcoholism. And then we go to we agnostics. And we're finally at there is a solution. You know, the... this one page, this first page, 17, we is in there 10 times, starting with the very first word. And so we know that we've come to this place in our reading that tells us that, first of all, we're not alone. And you may have thought you were alone. Probably in many cases, I wanted to be alone. You know, I remember my very first reaction to 12-step recovery not being very good, primarily because I thought you were a bunch of maybe religious chanters of some kind or something. That was kind of my take on it, especially when people were at the meetings I went to and saying, keep coming back and all that kind of stuff. It's like, oh, gosh, I am not that crazy yet. So, but as it turned out, I must have been because I kept coming back. So, you know, when we talk about these situations that tell us that, like if you read Bill's story, that he was pretty messed up. And in fact, they called him kind of hopeless in our first paragraph. But in the first edition, and many of us have this little anonymous press version of the book, and the first edition would have read, we of Alcoholics Anonymous know 100 men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill, all have recovered. That's how it read in the first edition. If you can only imagine how impressed people would have been with 100 people have done this and they're recovered. But evidently, they were. You know, maybe at that time, it was kind of unheard of, and these people really were considered to be hopeless. And you hear those two words together a lot of times, like, hopeless drunk, like, or, you know, whatever. Meaning that, you know, they've tried everything, and maybe they've even gone to treatment, and maybe they've paid thousands of dollars to try to get themselves straightened out. My experience has been sometimes that people are far more willing to write a check for thousands of dollars if there was some sort of guarantee that you'd have a straightened out life. You'd find the money somewhere, if that were possible. But as it turns out, you know, when they start talking in this book, especially with the context of step two, is that, you know, you're going to have a spiritual experience, because you came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity because you're crazy. And if you're crazy, then most people probably... in the mid-30s would have thought, well, you just need to be locked up. If you're locked up, maybe you can't hurt anybody and maybe you can't hurt yourself. So to even think that by some means this book and the way that Alcoholics Anonymous started out by having meetings in people's homes and talking through their problems, you know, on page 25 in our reading today is kind of the shortest version of the 12 steps, because it says there is a solution. Almost none of us liked the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But what we saw in other people as they recovered, that was more convincing to us. But it does absolutely tell us that there's going to be some tough work here, and it is going to require that, for instance, you level your pride. Well, you know, thankfully, it says somewhere in this book that alcohol can beat you into a state of reasonableness. And, you know, and sometimes that's true with hard-headed people like ourselves. Pretty soon, you know, when your life is just in a complete shambles, perhaps you'd be willing to listen to somebody who looks like maybe they have a solution for you. And so basically that's what they're saying. But if we gave the very, very shortest version, if there is a solution, we would say there is a solution, and the solution is a higher power. But most people would not like to read it that way, because some people have some prejudices, some anger sometimes towards a higher power, or things have happened in their life in such a way that they just really don't think this whole thing is fair. And if there was a God, he certainly wouldn't treat a nice person like me this way. But this ex-problem drinker, who is us, who has found a solution, who's properly armed with facts about himself and can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. And that's on page 18. So again, it's referring back to these people who have figured out some stuff. And they're not armed with facts about you, and yet they're the ones that are going to be able to help you. They're armed with the facts about themselves. Why is that important? I was thinking to myself, since it's Mother's Day, it would be very hard to accept the coaching of a man while you're in labor. You know, it really would, right? Because he's like, you can do it. You can do it, honey. You can do it. And you're thinking, what the hell do you know about this? Really? And you're telling me I can do this? You don't have any idea, any clue whatsoever. But that's why these alcoholics can help us, because they have the understanding. They have the facts about themselves. They have been through this. Perhaps they have lost marriages and jobs and children, relationship with all the people that they ever cared about. And they know what it feels like to think that that's the end and that there's no hope for you. But there is hope. And the hope is that if you will lay down your pride, and if you will say, well, maybe there's a chance that there is a God. And maybe there's a chance that that God would help me with my problem. And, you know, it says in this book that it is an illness. And an illness, by definition, is an unhealthy condition of the body or mind, sickness, disease. And, you know, it's taken a lot of years. And the book that medical people refer to all the time about what is a disease is being changed all the time, because we don't have all the answers. And we still don't have all the answers today in 2019. There's more to be revealed. And so for us, it's pretty easy to say to somebody, oh, you know, I have a problem with alcohol, or I have a problem with drugs. Or probably not as understandable to people is, I have a problem with food and I'm a compulsive eater. I think there's some disbelief that that could be that serious a problem, unless you've been in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous or Food Addicts Anonymous or many of the other 12-step groups that deal with food problems. Because we know, because we have buried people that we love and care about in this program, and they were compulsive overeaters. Because the illness is really not about the substance, it's about the illness. It's about, in your head, thinking that it's, you know, one of my very favorite things about Big Book Step Study is a bumper sticker that I used to have on my rear window that said, it's not them. And, you know, people would ask me about that sticker all the time. What does that mean? You know? And you know, you try to explain to a normal person, what does that mean? You know, what it means for me is that I had to come to the point by doing these steps where I really realized that it wasn't them. It wasn't my husband. It wasn't my parents. It wasn't that idiot driving in front of me down 95. It wasn't them. I am the problem. My attitudes have to change. I have to get God's help in order to just even change my thinking about who I am and what's really a problem in my life. I can't tell you the tiny little problems I have turned into a mountain in my life. It's embarrassing, and I wrote most of them down in my four-step. That's why I laugh some during my four-step, because it's so ridiculous. But, you know, it's true. It's true. That's the kind of mind I had, and the kind of mind that would have led to I don't know how many different kinds of addictions. You know, I think about all the things that I can obsess about in my mind. Sometimes it's just as simple as, I don't think I ever let spending or shopping get out of hand. But I used to have a friend that called compulsive eating recreational eating. And so I used to do some recreational spending. I didn't need anything. God knows I don't need anything. And I'd be on my way somewhere, and I would think, I think I'll just go buy TJ Maxx. And God would say, do you need something from TJ Maxx? And I would think, well, no. Well, then why don't you go home? I thought, okay, I think I will. Because I just don't have the ability sometimes to make even that kind of a simple little decision. Why would I go there? What do I need? I don't need anything. And certainly I could spend my money in better ways, especially when I pray about how to spend my money. So all of us find ourselves in this situation where we have come to a place where we are willing to try to do this work. And even that, for me, is something of a miracle, because I went to lots and lots of meetings for many, many years and never got to the heart of who I knew I was in real life. I knew it. I was with a group of people that loved me a lot, and I mentioned my tendency toward rage when driving. And all these women around me said, oh, I can't even imagine that. And I thought, you don't really know me. That's the truth. Nobody really knows me, because I can't believe it myself sometimes. I am a sweet, wonderful person until I get in my car. And then, like, some demon possesses me, and I'm, like, saying these bad things to people that I don't know. It's just quite strange. But that's the truth. You know, this work asks you to strip yourself bare of all those illusions that you're some kind of special, nice, good person, and just get real about it. You know, the paragraphs on page 20 that talk about all the things that we have heard as addicts. Well, you know, why would he do that? He lost three jobs in a row, right? Would he think he would get himself together? And his poor wife and his poor kids and, you know, all that sort of stuff. None of that ever made any difference. See, that's how you know that you're different from other people. Other people lose one job and they get scared and they straighten up. You know, others of us, especially when it's always their fault, can explain to you why we lost three jobs in a row. It's them. It's not us. So, back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. That's the people that love us that don't understand how this works for us, that we are so very, very different than they are. And, you know, I wrote down in my book here, we shall tell you what we have done, not what we know, not what we think, not what we dream about, not what we wish. We will tell you what we have done. And we have done these steps in the most rigorous way that I know how to do them. I mean, I didn't even know there was such a way, nor did I know that the answer was right here in this book and that the instructions were in this book. I read it. I just never found them. So, you know, was I a split personality like our Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Yeah, kind of. I remember I was having a fight with my daughter, not a physical fight, she would have won, an argument, and I glanced at my face in a mirror, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was absolutely terrifying. I was just furious, and it showed all over in my face. And so I think that, again, it's this matter of recognizing what we are and who we are and how insane we are. Otherwise, why would we be willing to do this? Really, why would we be willing to take these steps and take them really on a daily basis, right? Because this isn't a one-time shot. We get up in the morning and we acknowledge that we don't do well on our own, that we need a higher power, that today we want that higher power to help us make good decisions and keep us away from the substances which make us crazy and make us make other poor decisions. And so we have to decide how we're going to handle that. We, in Big Book Step Study, also have agreed by obligation that we will carry this message to other people as well. And so the work that we do, and by going through this 15-week rotation and reading these same things over and over, hearing people speak about them over and over, that's our way of studying and carrying the message, because I know that the message has changed for me. I'm looking at this bookmark that I have in here somewhere, and it was a convention that I went to several months before I crossed over in 2010. You know, that seems like a million years ago in some ways to me, but I have other reminders that I've been to conventions and other things, and I've really made this a priority in my life. And that's so important to me. I see people who just think, well, I might try it, I don't know. If I don't have anything better to do, I might do it. Well, for me, it was, I have to do this. I have to finally find out who I really am and get that straightened out once and for all. So wherever you are in the process, I encourage you to keep going if you have not crossed over yet. It may seem a daunting task. It is. I'm not going to lie about that. But you know, neither does it need to be 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 years. It doesn't. It just needs to be something that you think is important enough to put your effort into. Thanks.
Thank you.